From listener-supported KTOO in Juneau, welcome to Songwriters on Songwriters, an ongoing series from Juneau Afternoon. On today's episode, we feature singer-songwriter Marion Call. My name is Alex Cutlars, a fellow singer-songwriter, and it is my honor to deep dive with Marion today on her music, songwriting, career, and more. We're here in Studio 2K, and Marion will perform live on the red carpet stage, plus we'll listen and discuss a few of her recorded tracks. It's Songwriters on Songwriters, coming up this hour on KTOO.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juneau with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juneau. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shoe ye, we ka shook a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta ka na kaya ha an e kak, gunish cheese.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Idi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Such a gem of a meal. She collected on the cash, but her victory stung. She cursed at the cat that had captured her tongue. She broke out the chocolate and started to write, and it was almost helpful, but not quite. Dear sir, I've been dropping hints like bricks. If you peel back the polite, there might be something fierce inside. Remember the fete where the two of us met? Less a bolt from the blue, more social ineptness. The cool kids swarmed, you clung to the corner. That's how my poor heart before I could warn her broke from the bunch to bolt to your side. The rest of me followed a bit starry-eyed. And you took off your hat and you bought me some wine. And it was almost awkward, but not quite. Well, we had not so much for big parties and such. We'd rather observe than be part of the crush. So you uncapped your camera to frame the good times. I'd have to use napkin to scribble some lines. And the chemistry swept us both off our toes. You shot no one else, I couldn't compose. And you said I was sweet, nearly kissed me goodnight. And it was almost perfect, but not quite. Oh, dear sir, you've been dropping hints like bombs. 'cause my patience tried. And if you pale back the polite, there might be something fierce inside.
That was Marion Call with Dear Mr. Darcy, here on Songwriters, an ongoing series from Juno Afternoon. You're listening to KTOO, Juno 104.3, KAUK 91.7, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Alex Cutlars, and I'm here with Marion Call. Marion, we just listened to Dear Mr. Darcy, and I have to say, lyrically and instrumentally, this song is incredible. The first time I heard it, I was so blown away by not only the lyrics, but I have to ask, like, there's so many instruments in this song, and I just would, I would love to know how, like, how many instruments did you play on the album, and then how did you go about getting the other instruments, other musicians to help you?
Oh, that's a great place to start. I love that. The instrument I play on this track is, well, percussion, a couple percussion instruments.
Okay.
I play the typewriter primarily on this track. It's buried in the track, but it's in there.
Yeah.
I love how it sounds. Nothing else in a percussion kit sounds quite like a typewriter.
Absolutely.
It goes quack and thwack and like just kind of like noises that are hard to get other ways. And plus, it's very literary, which is very me. So I play shakers, and I think there's some rain stick in here. There's also the sound of a camera shutter that I think I embed under the snare drum sometimes to fatten it up. It's just like a lot of that, that kind of like little nerdy stuff that means things secretly to me. And the thing I play most is kind of like the orchestra, the whole thing, because I'm editing all the instruments together.
That's...
like, they don't always play this exact arrangement. Sometimes they'll improvise and I'll take the pieces I want,
or I'll
like move things over from another song even
that
sometimes.
That sounds like so much fun, just to have a bunch of musicians to get together and then just they play stuff and then you get to just organize it however you want.
Oh, yeah.
Which I haven't, not nearly as many instruments. But that just sounds like so much fun. I remember like listening to it, and then I was already blown away by like hearing the drums and the guitar and then the keyboard and stuff. And then halfway you just start to hear a horn section, the trumpet in the middle of it. And I was just like, wow, this is incredible. So
Well, part of how I get all those instruments together is I chase them instead of making them chase me. Like, I don't get everyone in the same place for a studio session. I travel to where the musicians are. So I lived in Anchorage when I made this record.
Oh, okay.
And I flew to Seattle, where a lot of the musicians I know who wanted to work with me live. Some of them are former Anchorageites. Some of them are my family members. Full disclosure.
Yeah.
They'll work for cheap. No, they won't. I pay them full rate. But I have a lot of music community there. And so we gathered there to do the rhythm section with a guy from Anchorage, a guy from New York, and some Seattleites. And so we did some stuff there. Guitar, drums, bass, the keyboard, the organ, Hammond organ, and the cello. And then in Anchorage, I recorded a whole bunch of percussion and some bass overlays and the horn section and the banjo, you know, just all these little extra bits and pieces, right?
Yeah, that's incredible. I'm such a big fan of that song. And then what is Dear Mr. Darcy about?
Dear Mr. Darcy is a tragic tale of two nerds in love trying to tell each other so. And having known many nerds and been in love many times as a nerd, it's never going to happen.
Yep.
It's just not. It's just not. External intervention is required.
It is so. One of the most awkward things I think I've ever experienced personally.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's definitely when you start to... Mm-hmm. When you find somebody that you do are crushing on, it's just, I mean, you're fighting tooth and nail just to try to move and push for it.
Oh, you know? Yeah. I'm a huge Jane Austen fan. I have studied adaptations of all of her novels. I've read all her novels many times. And this is my adaptation partially inspired by a real life, of course, but also mostly inspired by some rhymes. Someone was joking about rhyming with orange. You know, it's a common misconception that you can't rhyme anything with orange.
Yeah,
but there's more than one slant rhyme. And Ogden Nash famously, "I know something that rhymes with orange," said the man as he left with a creak of the door hinge.
Yeah.
And you just have to look at a different word, right?
Yep.
And so I was grumpy about people telling me what I couldn't do and decided to rhyme a bunch of things ostentatiously in response, which is sort of like, it's kind of peacocking.
Yeah.
But normally I try to contain that impulse. This was a song where it kind of all came out, just like all the rhyming possible and way too much too fast.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. The whole song is, it's lengthy too, and I'm a huge fan of lengthy, lengthy songs. I also, you know, definitely appreciate songs that, you know, are... Because I, for the life of me, can't write a short song to save my life. I have to.
So
there's
hard.
So much that I want to put into it. And yeah.
Oh, I deeply admire people who can do compact songs.
Yeah. It's, yeah. The simplicity is, I feel like, has always been the biggest challenge.
Oh, yeah. There's some great songwriters in this town of very simple stuff. And I'm mind blown by that.
Yeah.
And I want to get more that way. But
but
sometimes after trying for many tracks to simplify, it all sort of explodes out in a cavalcade of ridiculousness. And this
Absolutely.
Is one of those songs. So I'm glad that you like this because I feel, sometimes I feel like this is what I'm trying to keep a lid on.
Absolutely.
I'm happy
right
that
on.
You picked
so,
it out.
So... would you like to play a song?
I would love to play a song.
Excellent.
Yes, I will play you a song.
Beautiful.
This is called Dark, Dark Eyes, and it's one of the first songs I ever wrote. It is one of the simpler songs I ever wrote, but even then it has way too many chords. Not too many chords. It has a wealth of chords. Let's put
excellent.
It that way. Now, let's working on the internal language, right? This is about a teenager of the kind that you really want to make it. Like, you just really want them to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a special helplessness that comes from loving somebody that way and watching them do their own thing and just wanting it to come out all right, you know.
Yeah.
So let's give it a go.
Don't know how lovely you are, sweet, sweet soul with dark, dark eyes. Head to heel, beautifully marked, sweet, sweet soul, forgive my surprise. No, you see. Thank you.
was so good. I enjoyed that very, very much. That was Dark, Dark Eyes from singer-songwriter Marian Cole, and this is Songwriters on Songwriters. As we talked about earlier, this was the first full song that you wrote?
Yeah, it was funny. I had already got a bachelor's degree in composition from a university, and yet of all the things they taught us to write, like fugues and sonatas and motets and all these different forms, they never just said, sit down and write a song, you know?
Yeah.
Like a present day normal human song, the oldest form of music, arguably. Yeah. We never did that. And I left college and came to Alaska and found that a music degree doesn't let you do anything but barista, really. And so I started doing that in Anchorage, and I started hearing other Alaskan songwriters, actually. I started listening to Buddy Tabor and Bamua and Tom Begich, but I was listening to all this music and going, oh, you can just write a song like and record it and no one can stop you? And this was very different from my like classical and jazz training university experience. So I sat down and wrote a song out of what was in my heart, and it was a wildly new feeling compared to like composing a sonata.
The chord progression wise in that song is incredible, because there's a lot of different minors and majors changes and like little accents and stuff that I truly appreciate.
Well, thank you. That's probably the classical and jazz training coming in. This was very much a classical composer. Like, the last thing I had worked on was like a soprano and string quartet arrangement of Pablo Neruda, you know, and all of that comes into this, and trying to kind of like simplify it and make it easy to listen to was kind of my journey starting there.
That's awesome. Where did music start for you, your love and like passion? Like, when did you, the three questions I had was, when did you start playing music? When did you start writing music? And when did you decide that you wanted to turn music into a full-time thing?
Ooh. I don't remember a time before I was performing, because I grew up with musicians. My parents are music teachers, and I grew up sitting under the piano and listening to them teach. And I was performing for money from before I can remember. I know from photographs. So I was the cute little kid they could drag out on stage and do a thing with, you know? They were wedding musicians. I sang at a lot of weddings before I was 10. And ate a lot of wedding cake. it's a good gig if you can get it as a kid. I studied a lot of instruments, but never got good at any of them. And wound up realizing I loved choral music and vocal music. So I studied arranging in high school. I started arranging and conducting choirs, little choirs, and realized I wanted to go to college for composition. Kind of started writing music in college. Like I said, wrote my first song after college, after moving to Alaska and realizing songwriters are a thing, which I really learned up here. And then decided I wanted to do music full time. 2007, 2008, I realized I wanted to make an album first. And luckily, I was making an album right around the same time that it became feasible to sort of like have your home in studio kind of laptop situation where you could edit on Pro Tools at home without a huge setup, right? And so, yes, I went to record stuff in the studio, but then I could like finish it on my own at home. And at the same time, MySpace was a going concern, and Napster, and just like the music ecosystem was evolving around me to where an indie could get out there into the world, you know. Napster meant file sharing, sure, but it also meant that independent artists really got heard for the first time in a way they never had been before. And some important people heard my music on MySpace and blogged about it, and that was...
Yeah, that's... I also read blogs. About that. Yeah, that's... that part of it was... there was a song that we just talked about. Horrible memory, but you said you had a song that you submitted into a fan blog
That's right.
What was that song called again?
So that was called It Was Good For You Too, and it was from that same album. It was just a little goofy kind of side thing I did about a TV show, Firefly.
Yeah.
Which was from 2003, I think, although I didn't
Excellent
see
show,
it
by the way.
Until 2005. Yeah, short-lived, really interesting, just kind of evocative show. And I think so much fan art got made about it because it was canceled, I think, you know, just like people wanted to imagine more stuff or got really fascinated by the characters. And that was me. And so I was like, well, I'm going to write all these serious songs. But sometimes I get my best ideas from like a story, like Dear Mr. Darcy, right? And if it's Mr. Darcy, of course, it's very sophisticated to get your ideas from that. But if it's a sci-fi TV show from 2003, that's less sophisticated. So, but anyway, I entered the song in a fan blog and it won. And the song was actually selected to win by Christina Hendricks, the actress who played the character I wrote the song about, which was fun. So, Christina Hendricks is a fan of mine. No big deal. This was long before she got, you know, to the sort of winning Emmys stage of her life, but, or nominated at least. Did she win? I hope she won.
I
hope you win an Emmy, Christina Hendricks. When that happened, suddenly I got a lot more exposure than I anticipated from the kind of fan community around Firefly. And that really is what helped me go full time. Just start traveling and playing shows for people who wanted to hear that stuff. And I made some very silly and expensive mistakes as I began, but gradually learned how to kind of like be a road musician.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's got to be overwhelming. It's just like, were you, I assume you weren't like expecting for like, you know, a lot, like you put your music on the internet and then, you know, people like here and there listen to it, but it sounds like it got a lot of momentum as it happened. I put myself in that position and I just feel like I would be overwhelmed, you know.
Well, the internet was less overwhelming back then, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a little more fun and exciting and democratic and a little bit less. This was the pre-Gamergate internet days when things were a little bit more friendly. And I think we were starting to learn that. When I was growing up, the wisdom was don't talk to strangers on the internet. You know, that's dangerous. But at this era, we were learning, oh, you can talk to strangers on the internet. We've developed some tools for that now. And it's actually really fun and it's really great. And you can find amazing people out there. I found a whole new kind of friend circle in Anchorage of people who I never knew I would be friends with through kind of Twitter and MySpace and kind of grew into a more mature version of myself who turned out to be a big sci-fi and science nerd. And I met other sci-fi and science nerds and we got along. And making music was just kind of part of how I fit into that whole scene. So it was really nice.
Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, I relate in some ways, you know, being in Juneau and being surrounded by a lot of the local musicians such as yourself and all of us just kind of, you know, rooting for each other. And, you know, it's this place is just such a great community for local artists. And
absolutely.
I think it's one of the reasons why I personally have stayed here as long as I have.
Oh, yeah. Alaska is a really special place to be an artist. There's no one doing anything like what I'm doing. There's no one doing anything like what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that is great. Like, there's no sense of competition. There's a ton of weird collaborations that come out of it. And there's a lot of mutual support. And as I went outside and traveled, I go to these big music hubs like L.A., like Seattle, like Austin, New York. I've recorded in all those places and met great musicians in all those places. And every time I go there, the sense I get is just, wow, it is so hard to be heard here. It is so hard to find friends. It's so hard not to be competing with other people. And in Alaska, I've really not seen anything except just like a lot of mutual support for artists as like members of a community. Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Well, we have another song. This one is called The Nerd Anthem.
The Nerd Anthem, yes.
And it's also another one of my favorites. When I first listened to you, I know a lot of people oppose to this, but I do use Spotify. And this one has quite a listen amount.
Yeah, yep. That's the one that a lot of people know me for and remember me for sure. And look, if you do something topical, it's like doing a Christmas song. This one's that way. I have performed this in a lot of strange environments, from Google to Fermilab to CERN to NASA to the European Space Agency. Like, it just, you travel places and you do weird things. And this song is kind of what opened all those doors.
Beautiful. Let's take a listen now to Nerd Anthem. This is Songwriters on Songwriters, an ongoing series from Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek without the horn-rimmed glasses and knee-high Argyle socks. But nerdery is more than wardrobe deep, and I'm a nerd down in my heart, and that's where nerdhood rocks. I'm better acquainted than a good girl ought to be with Aragorn and Yosef Bridge and Worf and Hal and Han. But you don't really know me, and my culture don't control me, so don't you pigeonhole me, cause my phaser's set to stun. I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say. My superpower's draining fun from parties. But if I am a misfit, then I'm in good company with Auden, Austin, Hawking, Galileo, and Van Gogh, and countless other weirdos whom you really ought to know. So stow your expectations, no, I won't fix your PC, and I don't mind being underrated or ignored. The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end. In art for Dequan's dance groove swept the country, and suddenly old moon boots were Italian haute couture. Time magazine reported that our time had finally come. I guess they didn't know that we already ran the world. Oh, I have been a nerd since my first five syllables. Since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval in the end. I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend.
That was Nerd Anthem from singer-songwriter Marion Call, and this is Songwriters on Songwriters. Fantastic song, Marion.
Thank you.
And so I was just, while the song was playing, I had just remembered the first time I had met you was around when I first started playing music around town with the duo that I was in. Shout out to Liz Snyder and the Woolpullers. And we did a tiny desk concert in Junoites, Amanda Flores, in her home.
That's right.
Yeah.
I almost forgot that, because I had this idea of the Woolpullers were there, and like it kind of took me longer to be like, oh, Alex is half of the Woolpullers. But yeah, I remember Juno has had house concerts forever. I know Jeff Brown even like wrote a guide to how to host a house concert. And yet for a lot of people, they've never been to one or don't know what one's like. And my whole career is kind of built on house concerts, just going from place to place. Like sometimes it's a coffee house. Sometimes it's like a university library or something, or an aquarium, you know, wherever. But most of my shows are in people's living room. And, you know, you invite 20 folks over, you have a potluck and everyone throws 20 bucks in the hat and it's a wonderful time. The kids can come, you know, the pets can be there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's just, it's definitely, it's like a whole nother world as opposed to being on a stage and preparing. It's just very much more casual. I've only ever done maybe like 3 or 4 house shows. Mm-hmm. I've definitely always been more pushed more by other people to play, perform on stage. Mm-hmm. But anytime I've ever done a house show, I've always really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. I write a lot of words. Just so wordy. So many words. And it resonates a lot better in a really quiet room. So I wind up geared towards listening rooms, and just a huge percentage of the venues in the world, even here in Juneau, are bars. Yeah. And sometimes you can get that really hushed, intimate environment in a bar sometimes, if you really play it right. But a lot of the time, that's not the right environment for this kind of music. It's the right environment for other music, which I go out to hear all the time. But I try and find spaces where people are ready for, like, we're going to focus on the words now, because that's a lot of what I'm doing.
Absolutely. No, that's and I also, once again, you know, being an artist that has played at the bars probably more than anywhere, the open mic, the Mountainside open mic that you organized at the Rookery, that was one of the few I had almost forgot what it was like to play to a crowd that was completely silent.
Oh, yeah. People and when they're listening to you.
Yeah. And I just, I think that that's so great that you were able to organize that. And I had realized that you had done that for a few years now.
Yeah. I can't do it every season, just depending on what's going on in my work and life and stuff. But I think that Juneau is really a good town for arts. And what makes it a good town for arts is people are good at listening, you know? And sometimes they listen while they talk, or they listen with their feet as far as listening to music, you know?
Yeah.
Just dancing or shouting or celebrating or whatever. But I try and make spaces where people listen in silence, you know, whether it's give people crayons and an activity book, or just like express clearly at the beginning, we're gonna be quiet and listen now. But I really love how Juneau treats its artists when you give them, I mean, you do have to corral them into it. You have to make the right space. You have to do the work on the front end to make it work. But this is a special town for supporting art.
It really is. And, even at playing at the bars and stuff, you get really, really good at, especially if the crowd is really noisy, you get really, really good at shutting everything out on the outside and just focusing in on the song.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely a skill I picked up throughout the years of playing myself. As far as career-wise, is music full-time at this moment for you?
I've had a long journey from that song we just heard till now. I was full-time through COVID, really. And into COVID, I've continued, like, most of my living is still my Patreon. So if you're listening and you would like to support my music, I live on essentially crowdfunded donations still. But a part of my living, a significant part of my living now, is doing, kind of putting to work all the knowledge I've gained from touring and traveling and talking to other musicians to start organizing musicians statewide, like getting Alaskans to listen to Alaskan music, getting Alaskan musicians to talk to each other and support each other. Like, I mean, programs like this are really special. And just making Alaska music as much a point of our pride here in the 49th state as like the visual art is or the nature is, you know, just when that's anyway, that's my day job. It's easy to do, though, because I'm really excited about it. I do that with the organization Music Alaska.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely something to be said about, you know, as an artist, you know, most of the time you're really focused on, you know, the writing that you're doing or, you know, the shows that you're playing and stuff. And I have just been always just impressed with the fact that it seems like you have made this equal amount of not only pursuing your own career, but really, really, really helping all the other artists that you come across. And it's just, it's so admirable.
That's partially a function of getting older, you know? It's like you, the time when you didn't see me doing that was probably the time when I was out on the road 100 shows a year, right? And then I was much more self-focused, but also my lower back was stronger then, so you
yeah.
yeah. But it definitely, I think the older you get and the more you appreciate that community and the more you realize it takes work to put it together. And I kind of think of folks who are older than me in Anchorage and here who've like put in decades of work to making Folk Fest happen, to making booking happen, to making, like, you know, house concerts and jazz and classics and all these different things happen. That takes so much work, and I appreciate it more and more as I get older. Where before I just wanted to get the booking, you know, or play my songs. Now I'm like, oh, all that extra work, I can jump into that even as I can't quite handle 100 shows a year on the road anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
All That's right. not to say I won't tour again.
Yeah.
I might be doing that, but that is, not 100 shows
yeah,
a year.
And, you know, it's just that's always been a big dream of mine is mm-hmm. to be able to tour, and I haven't quite got there yet, but mm-hmm. I look at, you know, a lot of people that I know personally, such as yourself and a few other friends that I have that have done it, and it's just, man, it just, I can only just imagine, it seems like a dream.
Oh, it doesn't have to be, you know, a big bus and airplanes and stuff. It can be, you know, you in your buddy's beat up Subaru going from Seattle to Portland and back, you know.
That sounds like, that's way more
it's
fun anyway.
So good. Yeah, it's so great. The music I'm writing now is much more kind of outside myself and about community, I would say, as I've gotten older. When I was younger, it was all about me and my heartbreaks and my heartaches and my friends. And, you know, and as I have matured, I hope the music's gotten to be more about about other people, you know, and about all of us.
That's awesome. Yeah. Right on. Well, let's listen to another song.
This is the first song I wrote on guitar, and I'm just learning to play guitar now since COVID, since the quarantine. I was like, oh, if I want to be a musician, I better learn to play for myself. So I picked up an instrument, and I'm now getting to the point where I can play shows again by myself. This song is pretty simple, and it's one of the first ones I wrote using the guitar instead of just straight out of my head. And of course, it's about Juno and people and missing people and being in Juno.
I am a huge fan of the name as well.
Oh, it's Franklin in front. Yeah. And Junoites will understand that better than anyone else.
Tired-eyed people everywhere, and these ones here I know. Pinballing around my little ten-horse town, piling bar stools high with coats. Where'd we plan to land tonight, and what are we gonna eat? There's a band in town, there's a birthday party, there's a pallet fire out on the beach. I had dreamed I'd live in a small enough town I could walk by all the bar windows and find the ones I love and join them if I want. I had dreamed I'd live in a small enough world I could roll up any time of night to a candle lit for me and a kettle warm for tea. Probably it's the best it gets to live like this with the ones who've let us down and lift us, living in each other's pockets with the things we hold and the things we've dropped. The circle shifts a tiny bit to make room for my poor feet to fit on this crooked floor we've all tripped over. We know the steps by heart, and we're not all right, but we're all here, and I've saved a spot for you, my dear, so tell me all about it. We'll take a drop of doubt and down it. Oh, we're not all right, but we're all in, and I'll talk take you through that thing again till we say goodnight at the corner clock and walk. I had dreamed I'd live in a small enough town I could walk by all the bar windows and find the ones I love and join them if I want. Dreamed I'd live in a small enough world I could roll up any time of night to a candle lit for me and a kettle warm for tea. I had dreamed I'd live in a small enough town I could walk by all the far windows and find the ones I love and join them if I want. I had dreamed I'd live in a small enough world I could roll up any time of night to a candle lit for me and a kettle warm for tea. Oh, 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 oh,
That was Franklin in Front from singer-songwriter Marion Cole, and this is Songwriters on Songwriters on KTOO. And I'll tell you what, that song is just so relatable living in a place like Juneau.
it's the Juneau downtown song.
It very, very much is. You know, I'm most of the time, especially this day and age, I'm really only downtown when I'm trying to make a buck, you know, either hosting open mic or karaoke. And when I do, you're bound to run into somebody that you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's the right person to run into. Sometimes you're just like, I'm just going to walk away.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, there's pros and cons to living in a small town.
I remember the first time I came here for and kind of went out. That was to hear George Cuhar as Playboy Spaceman. It was for New Year's. And I had just met this guy here, Pat Race, and he was bringing me down to Juneau. We finally, like, went out on the town. And that night, because it was also, like, Christmas time and everybody was home, I think I met, like, 5 ex-girlfriends in one night downtown. And they all gave me the talk. Like, I was... They gave me the shovel talk, and I was like, okay, this is a small town, but also it's probably a good sign if the exes don't want to shovel him. So that was like my introduction. Welcome to Juneau. And it was a good welcome, and I'm actually buds with several of those people now. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, even I drive now, but when I used to walk all over the place, you'd run into 5 or 6 people just trying to get from point A to point B, and then you'd have to have that 5 to 10 minute long conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And then by the third or fourth one, you're just like, listen, I hope you're doing good. I just got to go. Like,
yeah.
I really hope you're doing all right. So
the Foodland chat. Yeah, Foodland chat. But you know what? That's where I wrote that song from, was that, like, during COVID, I didn't realize how much of my enrichment that was as an introvert, you know, just getting out and bumping into people incidentally who you know. There's nothing like that. It's very different from seeing people on purpose, and it's something that you just can't do in so many parts of the world anymore, where neighborhoodiness is kind of gone away or endangered. And here feels special, and I was very much missing that during COVID, as I was just, you know, working from home through a screen on everything and not bumping into random people at Foodland.
Yeah. So. And so you performed this song for your first time for Folk Fest last year?
I think one of my first times in public, yeah. I performed it, I think, one event before that where everyone was masked still. But the first time most people heard it and the first time I feel like I played it well was at Folk Fest last year, 2023. And that it meant a lot to be able to share it with Juneau, because I think it's, I can share this song in a lot of places, but people who are on the inside know. And really, that's its own kind of fandom, I guess, you know?
Just... And where could somebody, if they wanted to listen to that song, where could they find it?
The people who will be getting the good version of that first will be my Patreonistas, my backers on Patreon. I'll have a decent video of that coming out very soon. And I have already an existing recording, like a scratch recording, when I was first brand new at guitar. And so I like listening to it now. It's like a demo. And that is on an album at Bandcamp of my kind of stuff I've created through the Patreon. And so if you look up Marian Call Bandcamp, you can find a whole bunch more music than you will find on iTunes or Spotify. I have a lot of extra stuff. iTunes and Spotify get the big albums, but I have a lot more hiding at Bandcamp.
Excellent.
And that's really because Bandcamp is one of the few places that still pays artists money. You know, like if you care about an artist, local or far away, buying an album means more than, you know, 100,000 streams. So just pick up a record for $5. Usually it's name your own price these days.
Yeah.
And even if it's just a tip, really, you know, and you continue to stream it like that, if you want to thank a musician in town who made something you like, that's the way to do it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So are you do you have any projects in the works right now that you're working on?
I sure do. I have a lot of songs right now that I have written that I am figuring out how to get produced. Like, I've started some work with an engineer or two, and I think this might be a situation where instead of an album, I release like a couple little sets of tracks with different people, collaborations with different people, so that nobody has to commit to me for like a 15 song record. And also I get to work with different folks in Alaska. That would be what I would like to do. So I've already started some stuff in Anchorage. I'd love to record some stuff here, maybe Gustavus, you know, just see what different people's takes on the material is like now that I'm kind of playing guitar.
I just recently experienced Gustavus for the first time.
Oh, Gustavus music is lit.
Man, so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. I have a question, and I've never asked another songwriter this before, and I feel like everybody has a song or a couple songs that they've just written, they worked really, really hard on, but for some reason just they're not gonna just ever show it to anybody.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. There's a lot on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
I think I have over 110 songs now that in my notebook, you know?
Oh, wow.
But there's also about 20 that are just like, that doesn't ever need to be played again. You know,
yeah.
I think everybody is entitled to have some things that they keep secret or they bury or they stop or, you know, that's a normal part of being an artist, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, no, yeah. It's definitely been a struggle for me because there's songs that are the reason why I've always not had songs or put songs out there because they were just way too emotional for me while I was writing them.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, it's just we're already open enough as it is.
Oh, yeah.
You know, being on stage doing that. And for some reason, it's just this wall that you're just like, you don't need to tear that down.
Oh, yeah. That's very interesting because I find a lot of people write songs to express like deep emotions or to like purge deep emotions, you know?
Yeah.
And for me, songs are sort of actually like how I experience the emotions. And there's a detachment about that that I think is maybe part of being autistic potentially, which is something that has it feels like a superpower to me more than anything else.
Agreed.
Now that I'm older. It was not when I was a little kid, but now it is. I feel like it's less like the product of feeling feelings and more like how I feel my feelings. And so there's a lot of feelings in the songs, but I don't wrestle with that so much in performing them or in being vulnerable, sharing them. The stuff that hits the cutting room floor for me is often either too wordy or too complicated or it's not ready yet. But since I've been songwriting for a really long time now, I'm finding that sometimes it just wasn't baked. And like once in a while... Just recently, I've started working again on a song that I started 13 years ago.
Yeah.
I finally hacked it.
That's like,
oh, I figured it out. You know,
And it's a very exciting feeling.
It's so exciting. Yeah. And I remember one of the best things I ever heard about music was from Dee Daniels, who's a jazz singer. And she was playing a masterclass at a music festival. And I was in the room and she finished a piece and clearly looked disgruntled about something. And she said, "Ah, that note was right in another song." And I have remembered that forever. Like, I, as a result, when I write lyrics or a song or something's not working, what I do is I cut it up into little pieces, like a line at a time, and I keep them in a bag. I have a bag full of, like, it looks like fortunes from fortune cookies or something, but it's just the lines from songs or little segments from songs. And once in a while, like once a year, I kind of take them out, I look at them again, I rearrange them, and like that line was not right for the song I cut it out of. But it might be right in another song someday. Yeah. Or like remixed, or like when I'm far enough away from the emotion or far enough away from the experience, you know, when I realize, when I find a way to tell it as my experience instead of kind of as someone else's, sometimes that's the issue. But like every now and then my little pieces, my little fortunes rearrange into something. And yeah. That's happened. That's been happening more recently. I kind of hit a wall during COVID. A lot of artists did, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And but it's been kind of coming back. And I'm finding that some of those little snippets of things that I wrote right when I was starting out, suddenly I know where they go, you know, and it took 15 years, but I got there.
Yeah. Sometimes, especially the longer the song's been sitting around or the one that's mm-hmm. been half written, that you just, it just clicks. And then you realize they're like, oh, I have something to help have this song move forward. It is just, there's no greater feeling. It's so, I mean, it's just, it's just complete. And it's just like the whole entire time that it's been sitting, I've always been very, very patient about my songs. And, you know, if I'm trying too hard, I will just be like, just stop. Look, put it down.
Some songs are stir fry songs and some songs are slow cooker songs.
Yeah.
And I'm a fan of the slow cooker song, and that's why I don't throw away those old notebooks, you know? But this is what I always wish I could tell new artists or people just starting out, is like, have patience. Your art is going to change. You know, your art is going to develop over time. Your art is going to change. And it's going to take a long time to know what you really want to say beyond just talking about yourself and your feelings, right? It took me a long time to kind of grow into, to me, messages that were bigger and more interesting. And knowing how to process things beyond just like, this is about me, to like, this is about us, you know, and or about something bigger.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Marion, thank you so much for having me for this wonderful series. And thank you so much for, you know, letting us know about you and your music. And I've had a great time. I feel like, you know, as being a local Junoite, I have always just been able to talk to you in passing, and I feel like I know you just a little bit better now.
Thank you so much for doing this. I'm looking forward to your segment.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm already thinking about it. This next song we have is called Standing Stones. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
That's exactly what we were just talking about growing into the point where you know what you want to say. This album, Standing Stones, was one I spent many years working on and many years making. And it is a song cycle about, you know, kind of birth to death, human life, all that good stuff. But this song feels like how I feel about humans. And so why don't we end with that?
Excellent.
We drew nine lines from east to west, we drew nine from north to south. Then we stitched our names in concrete veins through miles and miles and miles of ground. The solid rock, it does not care if we scratch our names, if we scab and tear, if we line and spine and grind it, if we dare to try. Stone just like so, to map the stars' ascent, to prove we understood the moon, we left
Thank you, Marion, for sharing your music and story with us today. I'm Alex Cutlars, and you've been listening to Songwriters on Songwriters, an ongoing series from Juno Afternoon. For more info and past episodes, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon and click the Songwriters tab. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Cultures team. Boston Christopher is the producer, and we had help today from Aaron Tripp and Craig George. Thanks for listening.